So I'm continuing with just a series of talks on integrating opposites, the dance of opposites. And today I want to talk about discipline and spontaneity. And we could call meditation the discipline of spontaneity. The more you meditate, the more spontaneous you become. Sounds oxymoronic, like Jumbo Shrimp or Civil War. And looking up the etymology of oxymoron, it's a Greek term derived from oxy, which means sharp, and moros, which means dull. So the term itself is kind of, you know, the unity of opposites. So it's our series. I remember one of my favorite protest signs in the 60s was fighting for peace is like screwing for virginity. And so, you know, conceptual mind sets up these opposites, which aren't really opposites. The clash of opposites is really just a limit of conceptual mind. And so discipline and spontaneity seem like opposites, but they're very much related to each other in meditation practice. The more diligent we are about a practice, the more disciplined we are about it, the more natural and at ease we become. You know, another kind of oxymoronic thing is if someone tells you to act naturally. Again, that seems like an oxymoron. But actually, meditation is a way of acting naturally, is a way of practicing something so that you become more natural, more authentic, more who you really are. So first off, meditation is a discipline. It is intentional activity. It's purposeful. We direct the mind on purpose towards a object of mindfulness or object of metta practice. And we are really kind of using the intervention of mindfulness practice so that we can learn to go with the flow. Because we don't go with the flow. We resist the flow of life. And this training, you know, it just seems like paradox. There was the old, you know, adage to follow your heart. Joseph Goldstein likes to say, but we can also train our heart. Following the heart is clearly spontaneous, but we can train our heart. And that's really what meditation practice is. It's a heart training. And when we practice something over and over again, it goes from a state to a trait. It goes from something that we have to work on to something that just naturally becomes part of us. And as a musician, I play keyboards, jazz mostly. You train really, really diligently in jazz music. You learn your scales, you learn music theory, you learn harmony, and you learn what sounds good to you. And you practice that many, 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 many times. And that is the training that allows you to be really spontaneous when it comes time to perform. And it is an act of discovery. In the moment, it's very much an act of discovery based on all of your training, all of your discipline. So the discipline of practice is we have a form. We have something we're doing on purpose, something we're paying attention to. And we meditate. Often I recommend, you know, that you meditate for a set amount of time and you just stay there, whether you're walking or sitting, until your timer is up. Because, you know, what this really helps you do, the discipline of that really helps you just stay with your experience no matter what it is. And what you learn from that discipline, is that the mind is much more workable than you think it is. If you don't set a timer, you might just get up as soon as things get a little uncomfortable. But if you have the discipline of staying until the time is up, then you're going to sit with things that might be uncomfortable. And you're going to train the heart in learning, you know, that discomfort is workable. Physical discomfort is workable. Emotional, mental discomfort is workable. So the discipline really helps. And again, as I said, it's the discipline of learning to go with the flow, learning to let go and let be. And what we learn in practice from this letting go and letting be is natural, great peace of the heart, as the Tibetan tradition calls it. You don't have to do much other than pay attention to what's happening. When you kind of get out of the way, everything in your experience self-liberates, and you back yourself into natural great peace. There's just this ease and well-being of heart, this fullness of heart that comes just from paying attention. And then what you see is that life is nothing but flow. Life, existence, is alive and spontaneous. If we can just connect with what's really happening, spontaneity, change, creativity, aliveness, it's all just there. So practice really is the way of working with our mind and heart to connect with the spontaneity of life. And practice is really important to kind of get through the obstacles to spontaneity. One of the main obstacles is just our habitual stories. We run the same thought loops and the same concerns over and over and over. You know, somebody did something once that wasn't agreeable to you, and you've replayed it 89 times. It's a great insight to realize, oh, the locus of power is within me. I'm the one doing this over and over. They did it once, I've done it 89 times. So I can change in my own mind and really affect change. What's really interesting is that neuroscience and studying the brain shows that mindfulness enlarges the hippocampus. The hippocampus is the novelty and learning center of the brain. When we let go and just let be and go with the flow of life, we actually encounter novelty. We get out of our cognitive ruts. There's a very famous quote from the Japanese Zen teacher Suzuki Roshi, who founded the San Francisco Zen Center. And he said, "Our original mind includes everything within itself. It is always rich and sufficient." This does not mean a closed mind, but actually an empty mind and a ready mind. If your mind is empty, it is always ready for anything. It is open to everything. In the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few. So we run our cognitive ruts, and that really gets in the way of spontaneity. And then our thoughts can be so disconnected from reality. We don't see change. We don't see flow. We end up with a lot of delusion. There's a Bruce Eric Kaplan cartoon where two people are talking, and one of them says, "I've never forgiven him for that thing I made up in my head." What we learn from practice is that it's really our personalities that get in the way of our spontaneity. You know, our cognitive ruts are really the artifact of our personality. And what's really cool to realize is the part of you least run by your personality, by all your habits, is your body. Sensations just come and go in your body on their own without being driven by your personality. And then you realize all of your physical experience is that way, not just the physical experience of the body, but the physical experience of your senses of seeing, smelling, tasting, hearing. They're also not run by your personality. So getting into your senses is a really powerful way to become spontaneous. Just be aware of your sensory experience. And you see this a lot in, you know, the haiku tradition, the poetry tradition of Japan. Here's one from Dogen: midnight, no waves, no wind. The empty boat is flooded with moonlight. You can just see Dogen in his senses. The empty boat flooded with moonlight. Here's a little haiku from me. Hopefully I'm in my senses. Two in the orchard. The silver hip of the moon. Night air. Perfumed. Yeah, I'm pretty in my senses there. So one obstacle is just our cognitive ruts and the delusion of our cognitive ruts. And probably the biggest obstacle to spontaneity, the biggest killjoy, is our inner critic. I remember that book of spontaneous poems by Trungpa Rinpoche back in the 80s called First Thought, Best Thought. But our experience might be a little bit more like first thought, second thought. You know, we get in our own way because we're so hard on ourselves. We second guess ourselves. We're really up in our heads, in our cognitive ruts. And so the inner critic really has to be worked with, because it so gets in the way of just being here now. It's maybe the biggest obstacle to present moment awareness. And so what's interesting, so while the inner critic breeds self-consciousness, we can heal that self-consciousness with self-awareness, especially awareness of our five physical senses. Because again, this is the part not run by your personality. The more we are self-aware, become aware of our senses, and yes, we need to be aware of our thoughts and emotions, the more natural and spontaneous we become. We stop planning, strategizing our experience, and we just really start living it, connecting with it. So if you really want to be spontaneous, be disciplined with your practice. Sit more. And wait for the timer before you get up. That'll really help your spontaneity. So I will stop with that.